Welcome to the Mother Forkin' Podcast. Where we feed you some real shit on parenting. Hi, and welcome to the Mother Forkin' Podcast.
Are you going to keep that?
I mean, I was going to go with it for a little bit, but no one said anything. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll stop. Awkward. Hi, Celeste.
Hello, Megan. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Mother Forkin'
Podcast.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But that's okay. You keep telling yourself that. So you sound really good.
No, I don't. I am all sorts of congested, but that's kind of like the
life with kids who attend daycare.
This is the constant update. So this is the new voice that I will be using for our podcast. Now, this week has been pretty bad. My kiddos got sick actually days ago, and then I caught whatever they had. And at one point I'm like, this is COVID. And then it wasn't. And then it was an ear infection. So I'm
sucks.
Yeah. Hopefully I'm on the flip side of this all, but.
Well, you better be, because your ass is coming up here with your whole family next week.
This
super
will be the
excited.
First time we've seen each other in, I don't even know.
Since November, right? Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
November,
that's when we
since
moved.
You guys moved up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we're very excited for that.
Well, a couple things have changed since the last time we had an episode out there, and that is we no longer have nanny. We moved our kids to daycare, which and I mean, for those who are fairly newer listeners, who don't know my history with daycare and stuff in Houston, it was not the best. So that's why we were like, we're going the nanny route. And moving here to Tulsa after living in Houston and having the best nanny in the world. We went through about, I think, 15 nannies ever since we moved here in November. So it's been like 6 months or so of that. And then finally, the last one, it just did not go well. So we're like, all right, we're doing daycare. And the boys have been okay. Adrian loves it. And he's starting pre-K in the fall anyway, so I think it's good for him. And then Briggs is a little apprehensive, and he's no longer fully crying before going in. So that's nice, but we're getting there.
Oh, well, I'm glad that, you know, the boys, because it went a little better than you thought, right? Especially for Briggs. He, I don't know if he end up going to daycare when you put
he
him
went
in?
For like, I think 3 months.
Yeah. So this was all new. It takes a while, but have you guys gotten sick yet?
Well, so Adrian, this is their second full week, and Adrian came home yesterday. I could just tell looking at him that he was very drained or something. And I was like, oh no. And then I hear the sneezing and I'm like, oh man. So, but no fever, and everyone else sends their kid to daycare coughing, sneezing. So I'm like, well, I got to work.
That's how it is.
Has to work. So
yep.
Sucks, well, but
we're very excited today for a new episode. We have another guest today, and I'll let Megan introduce her.
Yes, very excited. Rebecca Tavares. I hope I'm actually pronouncing that last name right. Am I, Rebecca?
It might be Tavares, but either way, it's fine.
It might be. Okay. All right. Well, here's the thing, Kay. I really do not pronounce words that well. When people say, you know, like, see, I don't even know. Is it Mario Brothers? I say Mario. Anytime it has some A in it, and you know why I think that is because my name is spelled M-A-G-E-N, and I always say the long A, Megan. So I blame it on that.
Just blame it
on
an accent.
I think that makes sense.
Or that, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, blame it on Maine.
There you go. Yeah, but then I should actually have a wicked pissa Maina accent, you know, and just like not pronouncing R's and
Well, speaking of Maine, you guys are both from Maine.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, you were born there. Yes. And that's how we know each other. We were just reminiscing prior to hitting the record button. So can you share that? please repeat that story.
Yeah. So, and I just feel ridiculous even saying this out loud because my life is so different now, but We first met years and years ago back in our clubbing days. And we were from a real small town in Maine, which that also sounds ridiculous that there are even clubs there. And we probably met somewhere along the cobblestone streets that were full of bars and clubs, and everyone just kind of like poured out onto them together, and everyone became your new best friend. And then, I mean, it's a tiny state, so everyone's your best friend anyway, right? So those two. That's how we originally met a long time ago.
Yeah. Oh,
I love this. I wish I would have kind of been in this scene too, because I love hearing about Megan's bartending / strip day clubs. Not that you were a stripper, but so fun. I mean,
strip day clubs, before, strip club days.
Right? Yeah. You know what I mean. What is clubbing anyways?
I don't even know. I have no idea what clubbing is today, because clubbing for me is like going to a really packed grocery store.
Gosh, we're getting old, y'all.
Oh yeah. Megan, do you remember the go-go dancers?
Oh,
go-go
yeah.
Dancing. That I may have actually once approached you to go-go dance. Like that may be where we first met.
Maybe. And then what was her name? I went to friggin' college with her. Blonde. Oh my God. I hope she's not listening. I'm going to be mortified. But anyway, she was a go-go dancer for years. And I think she went down to Boston too. And she was super good at it and everything.
That definitely was a thing. We had that too here in the clubs in Houston, where they would wear the big fuzzies.
Yeah.
And their hair was like in pigtails and stuff.
Oh, the good days.
Yeah.
Oh man.
By the way, that's awesome. Celeste, you just said something about how when Rebecca referred to being at the grocery store, and that's like her club days now. And then you said, man, we're getting old. Well, I just posted this morning on my personal Instagram story that I need to share.
I totally saw that.
Super funny. Yeah. This person, I don't know, it's a screenshot found on the interwebs. It says that little scrolly thing to pick the year you were born, getting kind of far.
Oh my gosh. Seriously. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But it's getting to the point like we have to input it, right? I'm like, I gotta scroll down too far. I'm just gonna go ahead and actually type in 1984.
Right.
Just type it in. Go ahead and type it in.
And they have a bunch of memes out there too when you're buying alcohol now, where it's like they look at and see just the one and they're like, oh, you're good. Cause now it's like if you're in the twos, you know. It's sad.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Can't
crazy,
believe.
Crazy.
Yeah. Well, I told Christo, and he might be hitting you up soon, Celeste.
Okay.
So when I turned 40, which is going to be in a couple years from now, 2 years and I think like 2 months or something. But anyway, I was 16 when I had my first and only surprise party, but I really want a 40th surprise. It doesn't have to be a surprise, but I definitely want it to
be. Well, it can't be a surprise now.
Well, I'm just throwing ideas out there. So that's why I said it doesn't have to be a surprise, but
okay.
I want it to be a party. I want my friends and family to be there and I just want to have fun. So
I love this. So she's manifesting a big birthday bash.
Yeah. And I've told Christo about it twice now. So it's on his radar. He said, oh, I'm going to have to ask Celeste to help me. And I'm like, you do that.
I mean, we're planning our 40th. What's next?
You aren't. You're like 30, dude, aren't you?
Yeah, 30. Yeah. So got 10 years, but see? Still.
Oh,
we are together on the parenting journey, and we have you two ladies have a lot of wisdom. So today we're actually talking to you, Rebecca, about your experience through motherhood, and it's also Scoliosis Awareness Month. So
yes.
We haven't even dived into about yourself. So sorry, we're over here. La, la, la. But can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, Rebecca? You know, who you are, how many kids you have,
age, sex, location.
I know. I was like, oh, goodness. These are loaded questions. Yes. So my name is Rebecca. I am the mom of two. So I've got some experience under my belt. I don't know what I was thinking. I've got a 14-year-old daughter. And I also have a 3-year-old son.
Beautiful children.
Very cute.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I think they know it. It's like getting to that point where I know this sounds ridiculous, but like people will stop them, especially the baby, because he's got like those light eyes, you know? Mm. So people are always stopping him. They're like, you're so cute. I'm like, this kid is gonna like grow up with a real problem.
Right. He knows it.
He does. Yes. But yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I would tell you like what I do for work, but I don't really do work right now. I was laid off during COVID. So it's been like, you know, it's been a bummer, but a real different type of journey. I've always been that mom who's worked like crazy, crazy hard. Mm. So even with maternity leave, I only ever took 6 weeks, like max. And so I'm like kind of looking at this, like, it's just a new maternity leave. Like I'm never going to get this time back. So it's been really nice to just be able to be with the kids. And opposite of you, I now took my son out of daycare. So I've got him home. We're on week one. And let me tell you, that has been interesting.
Oh boy, I bet.
Man. So you're diving full into like stay-at-home mom mode.
So yeah.
That's crazy, huh? You said you've never really fully done it because you've been working.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I've never done it. I like it. I like it, but there's another part of me that's like, I would, you know what I'd be really good at? I'd be really good at being like a stay-at-home person while my child also went to daycare. Like, yes. I would rock that world.
Oh, 100% agree with you.
Oh man, that's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you so had a very tough last year, so that's kind of what we're going to dive into today, if you don't mind, and you can share with us as much as you'd love or like to. But could you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about your daughter and scoliosis and when you guys found out about that?
Yeah, of course. So my daughter's name is Mina, and she is like truly one of the most beautiful like souls you'll ever meet. She has always been super on the go with activities and all of these things. And so she's always played sports, all the things. And I guess now it was right before the world closed. So we had been on vacation, like this beautiful vacation, my boyfriend and I in Spain, traveling the world. And as I come home, I've got this like frantic phone call from her school nurse, which is weird. And she's like, Rebecca, you have to call me back. Oh my gosh, the school nurse is calling me. This has got to be crazy. And so I call her back and immediately she tells me, I found a lump on Mina's back. And so for me, I was working at the blood center at the time. I had a lot of history working in the medical field. Instantly, I hear lump on back. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like cancer or something, mm-hmm. you know? I'm like, you found a lump on her back. Like, okay, what does this mean? She starts talking about it. She's like, no, this is a really, really large lump. You need to have her seen immediately. So I'm rushing home from the airport. We take her into her doctor. And he says, oh my goodness, yeah, have her bend down. So she bent down and she had this huge, like what they call a rib rotation, which when your ribs rotate, it causes your back to like stand up way higher than the other side. So it's very off balance. But as a mom, like this is nothing that I saw because Mina always wore like these big t-shirts, right? She's in that age where everything was a big t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And so you never tell your kid, like, can you please bend over and let me stare at your back? Like, that's not a thing. Unless maybe they're a swimmer, right? And you're like watching them like dive off something. Yeah. So fast forward to this is a 3-day whirlwind. And I'm talking craziness because the doctors are telling us like, no, you need to go here. You need to have this x-ray. You need to go see this specialist. And so I'm thinking like world is ending. They mentioned scoliosis, but I thought scoliosis was just like this little like bend in your back. Sometimes people wear braces. I didn't know it was like a real big thing. And then a couple months later, we got in with an amazing specialist at Texas Children's. We had like 3 different opinions from all over the world. And they told us, you know, she had like a 58 degree spine curvature. And I was like, okay, all right, now what do we do? So now we wear a brace. And they told us, no, I'm sorry, you're way past that. She's got to have a full spinal fusion.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I was like, a spinal fusion. Okay. So we're going to like fix a couple things, like a couple discs in her back. And they were like, no, we have to actually go into her back. We have to fix like multiple levels from her back, basically from the top right to the bottom. And we have to fuse each level and we'll be adding in 21 screws and 2 titanium rods.
Wow. Wow.
That is a lot.
Okay, yeah. So can I real quick just interrupt, and is Mina understanding all this? Does she know what, are you relaying all this? Is she there in the room? How is she feeling?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we actually had an amazing doctor. And what I loved about him is he actually would speak to Mina instead of speaking to me.
Love that.
Yes, I didn't realize how important this would be until we got into surgery, right? Until like the real nitty gritty came down to things. So she was understanding. He walked her through all of it. He literally would ask her, like, and I mean, this was a couple of months of time, but within our visits with her, he would ask her, like, what is your biggest fear? What is your biggest fear about the surgery? Because you have to have it. There's, with her type of scoliosis, unfortunately, that curve will only grow every single year. And once you get to about 70 degrees, it really starts impacting your lungs. And so it's not because her back was hurting or because it looked funny. It was literally because it was going to very, very soon impact her lungs.
Wow.
So he was telling her, like, you know, you have the choice of not being able to breathe, or you have the choice of having the surgery, but what is your biggest fear? And he ended up getting her to open up. And, you know, she, I will never forget, she said, my biggest fear is that I will die. Like, I won't wake up from a surgery. Y'all, that was like, oof, you know, because, yeah, you know, yeah, as a parent, like, okay, you're going to wake up from a surgery, like, you're going under, this is a pretty big surgery, but you're going to wake up. But you don't realize, like, as a little girl who was 13, like, she's never been through anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
So for her, all she heard was, like, I'm about to have an 8-hour surgery, and I have no idea if I'm going to wake up from it.
Damn.
So, yeah. And
it's crazy, because you were saying that there was no early signs of her having it.
Nothing. That's why I think I did want to talk to you guys about this, because it was something we had no signs of. I will tell you, so in school, they do scoliosis checks. In your doctor's visits, they'll do scoliosis checks as well. So she had a check the year before, and her nurse had said, her spine looks like a little curved, but I don't think you need to be too concerned about it. Mm-hmm. But go, when you have her visit with the doctor, just make sure you check that out. So we did, and he said, no, her spine is completely fine. Within that next year, she had a major growth spurt. So Mina's really tall now. But she, I mean, she grew probably about 4 or 5 inches within that next year. And that's when it happened. So that's when those curvatures really, like, come out. And I've spoken with so many moms that will say, like, they literally had no warning, no signs whatsoever, and feel horrible. I mean, you feel this, like, incredible amount of shame, because, like, you're supposed to be your kid's protector.
Yeah.
But yeah, no signs, nothing.
Wow. That's crazy how quickly that happened. Yeah, I thought I always understood. I mean, I don't, so maybe we should talk about facts about this, because I'm sure I'm not the only one who doesn't know anything about scoliosis. So the only thing I ever knew was, or assumed, sorry, that people were just born with it. And that, like you had mentioned earlier, oh, you just slap on a brace, it straightens you out, you're good to go. That's the extent of scoliosis. Can you share more facts about it?
Yeah. And I was just like you. I really thought the same things. And I don't know if you guys remember having, like, those little things at school where you'd bend over and the nurse would be like, okay, let me look at your spine. And then you just go back to class. Like, it never seemed like a big thing. But so there's a couple different types of scoliosis. There's a type where you're born with it. And there's a type where there's, like, a actual, like, defect to your spine, which ends up causing the curvature. Or there's something called idiopathic, and that's what Mina has. And actually, that's the one that's most common. So I think it's about 80% of kids actually have this one, which is idiopathic, which basically means, hey, we have no idea why you have this. And it really starts showing itself somewhere between the ages of, like, 10 and 15. So right when you start having those growth spurts. And I mean, you're not going to see it. And especially, you're not, I mean, kids aren't doing, like, you know, x-rays and things like that at that age. So you're not even going to see if there's a slight curve until you notice a large curve for a lot of people.
Wow. And I was reading up on it too. It said that it's pretty common in females.
It is. So I think, and from what I know, and I am not a doctor, but I've been doing a lot of research too. And from what I figured out is it's pretty like the same amount of commonness, if that's a word, in between females and males. But with girls, it develops into that stage where it actually needs to have medical attention way more than with boys. Yeah, I think right now, I think what I was reading, it's about 2-3% of the population is actually affected with scoliosis. And it's just so crazy to me how many people have no idea what to do with it once you're diagnosed. I mean, we literally had no resources. We had nothing. The only place we found our information and started, I started feeling like, okay, I can talk to people who know what's going on, was a Facebook group. Like without that Facebook group, I would have been lost because the doctors had, you know, they could tell us only straight facts. They couldn't tell us like how to support her through this or anything like that. So thank God for that Facebook group.
You know, I shit on Facebook a lot just because I'm like, I don't know. It's not my favorite platform, whatever. I'm like a Facebook snob. But really, Facebook comes through a lot. Like all those groups, when I was the first time mom and everything, I relied heavily on those. So if really anyone out there, like go search through,
There's people of Facebook. All ages that come together for their specific community. And in your case, it was education and support through scoliosis. You mentioned to us that you did lose your job in the midst of the pandemic, which is crazy to us because when we were discussing on our our group chat we had going on, you were also telling mentioning to us about a little bit more about the procedure and what was going on at that time, which you said you got her procedure or her procedure was done during what month was it?
So she had her actual surgery in June. So June 2nd.
So a full year ago, a little over a
full year ago. Yeah. And
how long was that process from the diagnosis to you guys leading up to that?
Yeah. So it was actually pretty quick for us because her curb started growing even more during that time frame. So she was diagnosed in September and she had her surgery in June, and she would have had it sooner. But as you guys know, like this is COVID, this is like the thick of it, COVID, especially in Houston. So at one point in time, they weren't doing surgery. So everything, Mina's surgery wasn't life-threatening enough. It hadn't hit 70 degrees yet. So it wasn't considered like essential. So all of the other surgeries were put off for a while. But we got in right in June when they first allowed.
Damn.
Yeah, if you can imagine, it was, the whole world was crazy at that point. So trying to just like keep my brain focused on just keeping her brain healthy and keeping her, getting her ready to take on what she was about to, was a lot.
I will say though that this happening to her couldn't have happened in a better place. And I say that because Houston has top-notch medical facilities. And that's actually a huge reason why I was really sad about leaving there. I think the only reason, well, sorry, besides Celeste, because I really didn't enjoy my time there, but the medical facility is amazing there. So that's awesome. But I want to touch on when she had that surgery done. It was not only during COVID, so that's just crazy in itself. Not only the fact that she's going through this, and then her fear of, am I going to wake up? But in the midst of this is also, you said June 2nd, George Floyd had just died a few days prior. He was murdered. So protests were going on and things were crazy. And the hospital was right downtown in the middle of these protests, right?
Yeah. It was one of the hardest times being a parent for me, for sure, because my daughter, if you guys don't know her, but she is like a social justice warrior. Like this girl holds nothing back. And a little background, it gets us in a lot of trouble and it gets us in a lot of good things. But so, you know, I've got mixed race children. My daughter's father is Black. I am half Cape Verdean, half white. So, you know, and you see her, she looks Black. She identifies fully as Black. So for her, this George, I mean, not just for her, for everyone, George Floyd was a huge thing. And she had to deal with the whole George Floyd situation, knowing she had the surgery coming up, being in quarantine, all of these things, and then trying to grieve what had just happened. Like, this was too much. It was too much for her, being 13. It was too much for me. Like, I literally had to block everything out. So, like, if you were to look on my social media, anything, I didn't speak a single word about any of it. And I would have normally. This is something I would have been very, like, open about. But in order to protect, like, my peace and her peace and keep us, like, in an area of strength to be able to handle what she was about to go through, I actually, it was almost like disassociation. Like, we had to almost pretend it almost wasn't even happening, which is crazy. And yeah, we were, I will never forget. We were in her hospital room and I was trying to stay off social media as much as possible. And she had just had her surgery. And so I was scrolling through TikToks and there were all these TikToks and everything. If you guys remember at that time, it was all protests. Like every social media thing was showing protests, the good, the bad, all of it. And I just remember seeing like the protest downtown in Houston and just feeling like, oh my goodness, but also feeling like incredibly concerned. Like, is this protest going to turn really bad? Or is this one where we can be like, okay, this is something, and I hope this resonates well with people, but like, this is one we can feel proud of, right? And I remember when like our police chief was out there shaking hands with people and doing these things in the middle of the protest, like I literally woke Mina up and I said, Mina, it went well. Like, this one went well. We don't have to worry about this one. And I she was crying, I was crying. Like, it's something I will never forget.
Ooh, I have chills. We actually did want to talk more about the topic of racism, since you do have a biracial family, especially if you have experienced just the negative side of it all. How do you approach racism with your children?
Woo! That is a question.
I know, because you have a daughter and a son, so it's.
I do, and I have to be real transparent here. The situations with both of them are a little different. So for one, my son is 3, right? Like, he does not know anything right now. He's quite oblivious. And in being very real, my son is also maybe 3, 4, 5 shades lighter than my daughter. So his experience is going to be very, very different than Mina's. Most people will look at Jackson and think like he's mixed in some sort of sense, but I was literally just speaking to my boyfriend and I said, Jackson is never going to have the same experience that Mina is. Mina fully looks and identifies as Black. Jackson is a lot like me, where people will probably look at us and be real confused for a while about what we are, but probably not think we're Black, right? And so the experiences for them and parenting them and the conversations that I'm going to have with them, I have to assume we're going to be a little bit different. But with Mina, it's been really, really difficult because for her, she goes to a very, very small charter school here in Houston. So it's not like the diversity you would think of within Houston. She probably has, I think she's one of like 3 Black kids in her school.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is crazy, right? For Houston.
Yeah.
You would have thought you would have found that in Maine. In fact, you're actually going to find more like diversity in Maine, you know, right? Like, what the heck? I thought I moved here for something different. But so for her, all of this, George Floyd, really, to be quite honest, the election, all of this brought so much up in her school. And she is, you know, at the time she was 13. So these are a bunch of kids like really like finding themselves, finding their voices, you know, also like taking what they're hearing from home, bringing it into school, talking about things during debate. And Mina was always the one who was like on the other side of these conversations. So for her, it was just incredibly difficult. It was also really difficult for me to kind of like bite my tongue. There were a lot of times I wanted to go have Karen moments, like Mina would call them, and she'd be like, do not call the school, do not call this. I'm going to call the school. That is how I was feeling. But it was really, really, really hard. And the weird thing too, is I would say, God, she really identified with like the BLM movement, right? But there were a lot of kids at her school who would call this like, just like a fad or just a trend or all these things. Can you imagine? And like, this is Mina's life. This is what she's living. And she's got people telling her like, this is just a, that's just a, oh, the BLM trend. And it was a lot.
Would she say anything, do you know, to these people saying this?
Oh yeah, all the time. Like she never held back, which actually she struggled a lot in school this year, grade wise. And I honestly think it's because she was dealing with so much. Like she felt like she had to take this on for every Black person, right? Like she felt like she had to take this on for the world because she was the one representing it. And she had to educate everyone. But then at the same time, she's like, why is it my job to educate you? Why don't you know any of this?
It's exactly. Not her job.
It's exhausting to for her being in her shoes. And I agree. But we talked about it before, Megan and I. We love that this generation is having those conversations because if parents aren't talking about this, they're bringing it home. Mm-hmm. So as parents, we need to get on top of it and, you know, have those conversations in our homes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you in these other homes, it wasn't happening. a lot of the kids she was going to school with, these conversations weren't happening, or it just became, instead of like Black Lives Matter, it just became so political. So like, and I don't know how like political or anything you guys want to be, but like, it just became like, well, my parents vote for this person. And so this is how I feel. Like, I very much so believe this, like Black Lives Matter doesn't exist because we are voting for someone else. Like that's really how it was. I mean, this girl, she got permanent markers, like got a pair of overalls. She wrote all over these overalls. This is when they were still in quarantine, but had to go to school for a test. And she wrote all over her overalls, like Black Lives Matter, no justice, no peace, like all kinds of things just to go like stir shit up in school. I mean, she is like,
good for her,
one of a kind.
Good, that's awesome,
right?
I love it. I think that's great. And it makes me sad that anyone has to go through this, but it especially makes me sad that a 13-year-old girl has to be going through this, and the fact that she's over here trying to educate and let people know, like, no, it's not just All Lives Matter, it's Black Lives Matter, and this is what we're going through, this is what we've been going through for several hundred years. But it sucks that it's like all that she feels like it's all on her to be educating, and even not feeling like that, but a lot of times the white race puts it on the Black people to, hey, why don't you educate me? No. Why don't you pick up a book? Why don't you go to these, you know, watch these virtual webinars? Why don't you put in the work?
I remember her coming home one day and telling me, like, I hate when we have conversations about race or anything in school. And I'm like, why? She's like, or anytime we talk about, you know, eighth grade is also like very heavy. Well, let me put in quotations, very heavy talking about history and slavery. And so she always felt like, well, anytime we talk about this, everyone looks at me and wants to see what I'm about to say. And it's like, whew, I get it. And I understand like how hard that must be. But at the same time, unfortunately, this is like the road you have to walk. You can feel good about that. Like, you can feel confident about this. You can feel empowered to tell people your story and what you know. And so I just had to keep like reminding her, like, this is still a powerful thing. Your voice is still powerful, even though this sucks. And I wish you never had to be in this position. You are also like blessed to be in the position because some of these people would never be told the things that you're telling them, you know? Yeah. So I just had to, you know, just keep telling her that.
Exactly. And I also kind of hate that, like, just this, the stuff that they try to restrict from being taught to the kids, you know, like certain states take away history and try to just not mention it because it's too touchy. I really hate that. So again, that's why it's so important to have these conversations with your kids, regardless. I mean, how else are people going to learn empathy and to be better humans, you know?
Yep.
Oh yeah. The education system is like a whole nother podcast.
I know. And I have a lot of teacher friends and they're actually, they teach in Texas. So they're very upset about that. And they're like, nope, I'm going to keep teaching my book. As long as I can Yeah, you know, they're restricting certain books the kids read or certain events they want to like just blurb out, or you know what I mean?
Stupid.
Kind of just not talk about it.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then like I pay a lot of attention to what they're actually talking about when they start talking about slavery or African American history or whatever they're calling it, Black History Month or whatever. And it is very hardly anything that I feel like they should be covering. And it's so funny. One of her friends came over the other day. She's a sweet girl. She really is. And they had to choose. This is right before school ended. They had to choose, I think, like influential characters in history, like the most famous influential character in history. And they basically had to like become this person and do a project around it. And so Mina, she had a couple of ideas of what she wanted to do. Finally, she chose Malcolm X. I'm like, oh my gosh, you are literally gonna get yourself kicked out of school. But okay, great. Like Malcolm X, like, oh shit, you know? Like, and so she has one of her friends come over with her and they're talking about their projects and getting ready to do them. And Mina's talking about who she chose. And her friend said, oh, well, who is that? I don't actually know who Malcolm X is. And I was like, didn't you guys just have literally like almost 2 months of history? I swear you guys were just talking about like slavery, history, movements, all these things for 2 months. I remember hearing like, you know, Sojourner Truth, all these different names, but you have no idea who Malcolm X is? And she was like, no, I have no idea. You know, like my house, we're very about documentaries, yes, things like that. So
turn on that TV, open up that Google. Like,
well, you guys aren't leaving until you watch this movie. Mina was like, Mom. I was like, sorry.
That's no, awesome.
It's true. Because it's a huge part of their identity. Like for me, I remember being in school and being like, what about my Hispanic Latin X, you know, like where do we fit in all this, you know, Texas history, US history? And a lot of it's not told the way it is, or you kind of hear Cesar Chavez mentioned here and there, but it later affects, you know, you as a young adult, you know, whatever you want to say, because it's part of like your identity. Like I remember feeling like, I'm not Colombian enough or Argentinian enough. So I think that's very powerful that she's doing this for herself and that you as a parent are fully embracing her just in on this journey of just her being a little activist. So I love that.
Thank you. I don't think I have had much of a choice. It's like embrace it or what am I going to do with this?
Because I mean, your support goes a long way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of support, it's like a two-pronged question. One, I want to know how your friends and family were supporting you throughout all this. And then also, have you lost friends or family along the way because of the result of all of this? People not understanding or thinking you're ridiculous or questioning and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. So I told you, you know, half of my side of the family is white. Mm-hmm. So this has been real interesting because there's moments where I have maybe even been too quiet. Also, for me, let's just talk about that for a second. Like growing up in Maine, that was really hard for me. And I grew up with my white side of the family. My dad wasn't in the picture. So even that alone for me, like my whole entire life, really, I had major struggles with who I really was. And so then dealing, you know, trying to learn how to stick up for my daughter and make sure she doesn't have the same struggles has been a challenge as well, and tons of growth. But we do have family that had very different beliefs, right? Especially, you know what, when it came to the All Lives Matter statement. That was something we could not get past, and I will tell you, my daughter would not for the life of her accept anybody saying it. So, and I'm talking about even my mom will kill me if she hears this, but even my mom would be like, because she was here actually for Mina's surgery. That's how this all started. She came to help me out with it. And my mom said, you know, I totally don't agree with what's going on, but like, of course, all lives matter. Like, I do believe that all lives matter. Oh my goodness. Would you believe like war broke out in my house? Like complete war between Mina and her and my mom. Like it ended up turning like actually into a very emotional conversation, real raw conversation, because for my mom, in her heart of hearts, like what she was thinking and what she was saying is like, Well, of course, everybody's life matters. Like, right. Of course, these police officers have families. They have all these things. Their life matters. And Mina, you know, she's like, it doesn't matter. And I remember her using like all these different analogies. Like, if a fire broke out here, or yeah. and the other house was not on fire, like, I don't know, would you say that that fire, that house that's not on fire matters too? Like, all these things, like different ways Mina was trying to, you know, make my mom understand, and she wasn't getting it. And so finally, I think at some point, she sort of got it. And I don't think my mom would ever say all lives matters again. but I still do not believe she will ever true. And my mom has, you know, you would think my mom would understand this because my brother and I, you know, mm-hmm. are not fully white.
Yeah.
But my mom, I think she has a new understanding from Mina. Like, Mina has definitely been able to educate my mom a bit more, but there's other people in our family who I wouldn't say we've lost them in our family, but I just choose to not keep as close in touch with them. Because, you know, social media brings out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like you were saying, there's moments where you have to, for your energy, for your mental health, just, you know, you have to check out, and that means disconnecting from certain people. And, you know, it's just, I think it's beautiful that your daughter was able to do that for your family and to show them like just this understanding of, this is where I'm coming from. You know, I think that that's what this is about, is empathy and showing like, wait a minute, like, hear me out, you know? So I love that your daughter is able to do that for your mom, because I felt like I also had similar experiences where I was like, you're not understanding. So having an open heart and an open mind really made a difference in, you know, these conversations that we were having.
Yeah, absolutely. This all led to a lot of hard conversations. And it's interesting, right? When they're within your own family.
Yes.
It's like, I love you because you're my family, but oh, right now I really hate you because you can't understand this. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
When everything was really going down just after George Floyd, Floyd's death, and I picked up the book Stamped from the Beginning by Ibram. My gosh, why am I blinking on his name? I'm so sorry. Anyway, Kendi, gosh,
there you
found
go.
It. Thank you. Anyway, great book. Very thorough in the history of just what the Black community, Black people have been through. And there were some things in there that I've read and learned about, but man, there were way more things in there that I did not know about. And it was like, why wasn't I taught this in school? Where was this book then? It's mind blowing. When I read that book and tabbed the shit out of it and started having conversations in my household, in my parents' household, with friends, stuff like that, I would get frustrated because here I am reading this, learning all this stuff, but then they didn't read it. They didn't understand. And then I would be like, no, but you're not understanding. And it would just, you're right. Tempers would flare. And I would have to just, actually, I always stayed at the table. They were the ones who just walked out because they just couldn't take it. So I was like, okay. you know, so it's tough. And I cannot imagine what Mina is going through, what she went through, what she's going to be going through. Same thing, even for Jackson, especially, I mean, he's a male. So I don't know. I think from what I've been seeing and hearing, it's maybe a bit different for Black men. It sucks that people have to go through that stuff. And then you as well, being mixed, being a mom to mixed babies, you guys are brave and you're strong. And I love the work that Mina's doing. I love how you are parenting her. I think you guys are all doing the right things. And man, I hope that little girl continues to have her voice and continues to really project on people what she feels and how she feels.
Oh, yes. Thank you. And I don't think it's gonna stop. I think we're probably, I keep saying like Mina's gonna be something ridiculous. I don't know what it's gonna be. I don't know if it's just gonna be in politics or she's gonna be some kind of crazy activist, but yeah. She's going to do something pretty awesome. So I'm very, very proud of her. Even though parenting, like that's a whole nother real story, but like parenting a child like that is extremely difficult.
Strong-willed child, huh?
Yes. I just keep telling myself, when she's an adult, this will all be okay. Like, parenting the child part. Off. Yeah.
But I mean, all you can do at this point is just continue. All right, cool. This is how you're going to be. Great. I support you. Let's figure out the ways that you can use this voice. Let's get you a little soapbox and figure out which path you can take to share this voice out
there. Well, like you were saying too, Rebecca, like it's this journey has been so much growth for you as well. And I feel the exact same. Like this parenting journey, just period, I've grown so much from it because you're more aware of like, you know, let me give my child the voice that I feel like I didn't have or the confidence that I didn't have. So she's gonna be a rock star.
She is. Woo!
We're cheering her on. If I can make it through her little, this phase, then yes, we will all be good.
You'll get through. You get through every stage of parenthood. You'll do this. Would you like to leave any advice for our audience or listeners who might be dealing with either something like scoliosis, how to get through that, or any last words for people who are raising biracial children?
Yeah, I would say for the scoliosis part, like you're going to be okay. There are resources, there are people. Your hospital and doctors are not going to share that with you, but honestly, go to Facebook, go to the internet, start finding those groups, because the best thing that I found was that group. And through that group, I found like two people that I got connected with. One was a mentor for Mina, which was incredibly important to me because she was a Black woman. She was a dancer. She had gone through this as a teenager and she kept in touch with Mina, like sent her gifts, everything. If Mina had a question, she could go to her. The other girl that we found was a mother who had a daughter, Mina, same age, and they were about to have surgery 2 days apart. So those two people became so key to me because no one else knew what we were going through, right? And like our immediate circle. So I would say just reach out to people on the internet. The internet can be your friend sometimes. With the other situation, you know, I just have to say, parent the way that you believe you need to with your own child. Because for me, it has been very difficult because Mina's voice is so out there and loud, and she is a lot. There have been opinions like within family or friends with things she should be talking about, things she shouldn't be. I mean, Mina was literally taking a knee in fifth grade at the pledge. So she's been doing a lot of this for a long time, and a lot of people have their opinions on it. But I think at the end of the day, you just need to do what you think is best for that child. Like, no child can be raised the same way as another child. Like, I will raise Mina very differently than I will raise Jackson, but you've just got to like breathe life into their gifts and into their voice. And that's what I got there.
Amazing. Love it. It was a pleasure having you on. It's been a crazy year for you, and you guys have done amazing. So keep it up, Mama. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.